Hello, I'm Harry Glorikian, and this is Moneyball Medicine, the show where we meet executives, entrepreneurs, physicians, and scientists using the power of data to reinvent healthcare. From machine learning to genomics to personalized medicine, we look at the biggest trends in patient care and healthcare management. And we talk to people behind the trends to find out where data is making the biggest difference. My next guest has said, when the issue of the use of IT in healthcare comes up, we are frequently stymied by the fact that the solutions presented are very expensive and not particularly user-friendly for providers that use them, and not even what patients are looking for. Many of the innovative IT solutions I hear about seem to be solutions looking for problems. Dr. Kevin Tabb is President and Chief Executive Officer of Beth Israel Lahey Health, a pioneering integrated healthcare system offering a full continuum of healthcare services ranging from hospital to ambulatory to urgent to behavioral healthcare. Before coming to Beth Israel Lahey Health, Dr. Tabb was Chief Medical Officer at Stanford Hospital and Clinics in Stanford, California. There, he had broad strategic and operational responsibilities, which included physician network strategy, clinical quality and patient safety initiatives, regulatory and medical staff affairs, and graduate and continuing medical education. He was previously Chief Quality and Medical Information Officer at Stanford. Prior to joining Stanford, Dr. Tabb led the Clinical Data Services Division of GE Healthcare IT. Raised in Berkeley, California, Dr. Tabb immigrated to Israel at the age of 18 and served in the Israel Defense Forces, the country's military service. He received his undergraduate degree from Hebrew University in Jerusalem and his MD from the Hebrew University Hadassah Medical School. He completed his residency in internal medicine at Hadassah Hospital. Dr. Tabb, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's interesting because both of us are actually from California. I was born and raised in San Francisco. You were raised in Berkeley. So
right across the bay.
Right across the bay. Big changes over there these days.
There are, lots of changes. It's, it's interesting, though, coming from Silicon Valley and the San Francisco Bay Area, which is really the mecca of IT, coming to the greater Boston area, which is the mecca of healthcare.
Right.
And we like to think of ourselves here in the greater Boston area as the Silicon Valley of healthcare.
Yes. No, I was actually thinking about the juxtaposition of the two geographical locations. As good as the Bay Area is, as you know, because I'm originally from there, this is a different animal.
It really is. Even I would say the cultures are different. And yet, you see a lot of people migrate from one coast to the other. Fascinating place to be. Fascinating time to be in healthcare in Massachusetts.
Yeah, I think actually it's between the hospital systems and then the universities creating these, what you may use eventually in your hospital system. I think that synergy is very interesting here.
It is. It's a combination of the wealth of great healthcare institutions that exist in Massachusetts and the greater Boston area, the universities that are here with the constant flow of interesting people and new grads, but also the concentration of biotech and increasingly healthcare data companies that are realizing that there's a hotbed here that can be used to play in and to innovate, ultimately.
Interesting. So let's jump to you. You've gone from, if I remember the history I heard in one of your last talks, from actually writing code and being able to pull data from information systems to now being CEO and of a large system and managing this merger, which is not a trivial exercise. How did you see your role shift from being the data guy, knowing what to do, how to do it, even almost how to, writing the code itself, to the strategic role and mentor and guider of this entity?
It's a fascinating question because I would absolutely agree with you that my role and the role of a CEO is really different than any of the previous roles that I've played. You're right. I've had sort of an eclectic background. I've been a clinician in another healthcare system in another country. I've worked in small startups, electronic health records. I've worked in large companies and corporations in healthcare IT, and then gone over to academic medicine on the West Coast and on the East Coast. And those are all different roles in different places. I would say that I was most struck in coming to Boston and what was my role at the time, CEO of Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, at how much of a change I needed to go through in terms of what I focused on, and had those discussions internally with my own team. When I came to Boston, I had a conversation with the person who was the CIO of Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center at the time, Dr. John Halamka, who's well-known in healthcare IT circles. And one of the things that I talked to him about was the fact that I was not coming to this role to be a shadow CIO. We didn't need, in fact, two CIOs at this place. He was doing and continues to do a phenomenal job. I needed to focus on other things. And I, as CEO, focus on a small number of things, most of them strategic in nature. And my job is to frame the questions that need answering for my team, not to determine what the answers are. And that fundamentally is the difference between some of the roles that I've filled previously, where I needed to come up with the specific solution. I needed to come up with a specific idea. Now I believe I need to find the people who are better than I am at coming up with the best solutions to the problems that we have in front of us.
But right now, healthcare is in the has been in the middle of a shift between fee-for-service and a value-based environment. And so the phrase I've always heard is like we're almost two canoes, one foot in each canoe, and sort of straddling the river. What are the sort of strategic items that you've had to paint a picture for everybody and then get everybody developing systems that get you there?
Well, I think you're right. We all of us know in healthcare that we are in this strange interim period between in the midst of a significant change in the business of healthcare, certainly, and in the way that we, even in the way that we deliver care, what you have referred to as one foot on the bank and one foot in the canoe, and that's a hard time to be in. But that's the reality of the situation. I think that for many of us that are leaders in healthcare, if we had magic wands, we would wave it and move quickly to get all the way to the other end and sort of be in one system. But we don't have those magic wands. And so we need to figure out how we live in that hybrid world right now. The most significant challenge, I think, that any of us as leaders in healthcare face in this particular time is figuring out how to calibrate the pace of change. And what I mean by that is we all know that change is coming, and some of that change has already occurred, but there's still a significant amount that will occur in the future. None of us as leaders want to wait until change has hit us in the face. In other words, none of us want to be at a place where we are staring over the cliff already. The wheels have come off, so to speak, and then try to figure out how to change, how to morph and be different. That's a terrible thing to do. You never want to do that. Okay, so we all know we need to get out ahead of it. The question is, how far ahead do you get of your current state? In other words, we exist in this world. For instance, you talked about the issue of fee-for-service versus global payment. And things are changing. And many of the patients that we take care of now are under some form of global payment. And yet, a significant portion of our revenue is fee-for-service.
Right.
How do we get out ahead of the curve, and how far ahead of the curve should we get so that we are ready for the significant change as it comes, but not so far ahead that we've shot ourselves in the foot and can't survive in that interim period. And that calibration of how far ahead to get is not something that there is a checklist that can give you an answer about. It's not something that I can plug into a spreadsheet and receive an answer on. There's an art to that, and I think we're all constantly calibrating, trying to get ahead, and yet make sure that we are that we survive and in fact thrive in the environment that we live in now. It's, I believe, more of an art at this point than a science. And one that, in fact, is not particularly unique to healthcare. There are lots of industries that have been through change. And I think a lot that we can learn from others.
Yeah, no, I was thinking about, you know, I mean, you have all your lessons probably from GE, especially where there's a corporate strategy of we're going to have a Skunk Works project. We're going to give people 10, 15% of their time to sort of ideate on different things. We're going to come up with a unit that actually gets to experiment on things and let's see how it works. And then we can integrate it back into the pack. You have a unique background, and I'm wondering if you were thinking about other parts of the country and other institutions, what would be some of the experiences that you might be willing to share with people?
Well, it's interesting because what you just described of both Skunk Works, but allowing people to come up with innovative designs and ideas is something that we do here, I think, in a really interesting way, and one that is different than many places that I've been. And as we morph and change as an organization, so we've just been through a significant merger. We've gone from a smaller system, a healthcare organization that was a total of four hospitals with a little more than $2 billion in revenue now, to one that is almost three times that size in one fell swoop. So $6 billion in revenue, 13 hospitals, 35,000 employees, a myriad of different IT pieces. And one of the many issues that we're facing is how do we go through this merger, which can at times be chaotic. but how do we do that, keep our eye on the ball, focus, and still maintain our legacy of innovation and entrepreneurship? One of the things that I decided to do structurally is to split the pieces out. So what I mean by that is typically a healthcare CIO is got to deal with budgets, bandwidth, delivering projects that have long been determined on time and on budget. And when smaller companies, new ideas come and approach healthcare CIOs, the typical response is, please go away. Yeah. Don't bother me. I've got to be focused. And I have a lot of sympathy for that, having filled those roles and demanding that of my CIO.
Right.
And yet, that's really a pretty disturbing answer if you think about it. Because how are you going to get innovation if the answer to innovative ideas is go away, don't bother me?
Right.
And so, in fact, what I did was I split these roles out within our organization, and I asked John Halamka, who was the CIO, to step into an innovation role.
Right.
And we have a CIO who focuses now on the day-to-day bread and butter running of the systems that we have, but we have somebody else whose job it is to say to new companies, to innovative ideas, please come. Bother me. Let's play with this. We have a sandbox for it. Let's try things out. Let's try new things. And the hope there is that we are able to do both things at once as an organization. We are able to deliver on the focus that we need as now a much larger entity, but we don't lose our ability to innovate and to entertain new ideas.
Well, John's job sounds like a dream job, to be quite honest.
I think it is. I think that he's having a good time.
I think anybody listening to this now is going to go bug their CEO and see, I want that job.
That's right.
So you had mentioned earlier technology and the analogy of a three-legged stool.
Yeah.
And so I'm always trying to look at it from a venture standpoint of where to put investment, how to invest, what will ride an inflection curve and provide value. And you've got to look at it from changing behaviors and everything else. So how do you look at technology versus the other pieces of the puzzle that you know need to be balanced to get implementation?
Yeah, I'd say a couple of things. I think, first of all, I want to start by saying that unfortunately, a lot of what I see, and I'm approached on a weekly, if not daily basis with, interesting new ideas out there. A lot of what I see is, you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, is what I would call solutions looking for problems. And what I mean by that is that people do come up frequently with innovative solutions for small things. The problem is that in healthcare, we live in a larger ecosystem. And by simply solving a single point issue and not thinking about sort of the end-to-end solutions,
right,
we end up with bottlenecks somewhere else, and therefore it's not useful to me. When I take a step back and think about what we really need, what I really need within our organization, as we go through this period of turmoil, this changing a model both for the business of healthcare and the way that we deliver healthcare, I really think about the fact that what we need to do is find ways to affect behavioral change. And behavioral change means by clinicians, by people who run our healthcare systems, and by patients. And the question is, what are those pieces that are going to be best at allowing us to affect and get that real change? Healthcare IT and IT in general has a role to play in affecting change, but it doesn't exist in a vacuum and is certainly not the only thing that is needed. When I think about where we get real change, it's when we have a number of different pieces at the same time. I think about at least three different pieces that are needed, the three legs of a stool, so to speak. And that includes having good information, good data that's actually actionable. So it's not just the data itself, it's making it into actionable information. That's a real important piece, but it's not enough in and of itself. So that's one. The second is that we need to align incentives. And by the way, when I say incentives, people immediately think that I'm talking about money.
Right.
And sometimes that's the case, although that is not the only incentive that exists in a complex ecosystem like ours. And incentives are frequently misaligned, the things that are important to people. That's what you should think about when you think about incentives. So an alignment of incentives is the second piece that's really important to affect change. And the third piece is that we need to provide people with toolkits for change. And by toolkits, sometimes that's an IT piece, but it's not always an IT piece.
Right.
Sometimes it's coming to consensus around what the right way to do something is. And what I find looking around the country, and in my own experience at the organizations that I've worked in over time, is that we most often implement one or two, but not all three of those pieces, and then scratch our heads as to why we are not getting change. So if you think about it for a minute, if all that we do is provide data to people, but we've not aligned incentives, and we don't help people with how they would make change, even if they know that they need to make that change, then we should not be surprised that we don't get the change that we're looking for. If all that we do, and this frequently, more and more frequently, what is occurring now is we are aligning incentives, providing payments or other things, but not helping people with how they would get that change and not providing them with actionable data. And so then we scratch our heads why we don't
right.
get the change. And so you need all three of those pieces. And it's a rarity that I see that we have in place all three of those pieces. When we do, that's when we get change.
It's interesting because, I mean, those that three-legged stool has existed in, say, corporate strategy and when you're going to implement something and make a change or something forever, right? And it seems that because healthcare had not had a huge shift for so long, that these are concepts that now need to be embedded within a healthcare system.
They are. They're not. They're obviously not simple. Otherwise, they would have been done already.
Right. Right.
Whereas in a simple corporate structure, it's pretty easy to come up with, say, a simple toolkit for these are the things that you need to do. That's much more difficult to do in healthcare, and in fact, frequently find there's no. We find that there's no consensus among experts on what that toolkit should be around. What really high quality care is, or how we would measure that, or all of those things. And so these are not simple things. I would say, though, that the fact that we have not reached nirvana yet, the fact that we do not typically implement all of those pieces, has nothing to do with the fact that technology lags. In other words, we're not behind in healthcare because of a lack of feature functionality. That's not the issue. The issue is there are many complex pieces to this puzzle that all need to be put in place at once.
So we were talking about behavioral change, and I think about where value-based care is sort of, hopefully, for all of our sakes, leading the system is sort of towards keeping people healthy as opposed to treating people when they're sick. Where the brunt of the cost ends up. So if you're managing people or trying to keep them healthy, technology does start to play, hopefully, a larger role because nobody has a dashboard for themselves for the most part. And so whether I can monitor my diabetes better or whether I can see a heart issue faster or any one of these different variables, how do you see the impact of technology sort of outside of that traditional space? And when I say traditional space, I see home use coming into play, CVS and Aetna and this merger, and so their motivation and the strategy they need to implement. But you have got a large community-based structure that you've got to manage. And so how do you see that evolving into the future? And how do you manage that revenue transition change, I would say?
Well, we're definitely going to still in the process of figuring out how we build out an infrastructure that will allow us to deliver care in a really different way. But before we even determine what that IT infrastructure looks like, I think we need to agree on what the future focus of healthcare organizations needs to be. So if you take a step back, and I'm frequently asked what keeps me up at night, I'll say, I tell my own team, I've talked a number of times with them about the story of Kodak. And,
yes.
In fact, I was talking about this with my kids at dinner last year, and the interesting response I got from my kids was, who's Kodak?
Who's Kodak, yeah.
And that's sort of the point of the story. Of course, Kodak's still around, but at one time, Kodak was the only game in town.
Right.
And when Sony came out with the digital camera, the response at Kodak was not, in fact, to ignore it. They did an analysis of what was this a threat? And what they looked at was, okay, does Sony make film, because we, Kodak, make all of our money off of film. And of course, Sony was making digital cameras. They didn't make film.
Right.
Well, does Sony make chemicals? Because they made a lot of their margin off of chemicals. Well, obviously, they didn't with a digital camera. And they came to the conclusion that the digital camera was not a threat to them. And obviously, that was a mistake because the company tanked. Now my kids are asking who Kodak is. So what was the mistake they made? I think that the mistake they made was that they did not fully understand the business they were in. They thought that they were in the film or chemicals business. But in fact, one could say The truth is that they were in the images business. And images, it turns out, can be made in lots of different ways, including ways that they had not contemplated.
Right.
So how is that relevant to us as leaders in healthcare? I think it's actually extraordinarily relevant because many hospital CEOs, healthcare system CEOs, provider leaders, while we talk about doing all of the right things, we're extraordinarily dependent on our existing model. And a simple description of the existing model is a heads in beds model.
Right.
Meaning the more people that we have in our facilities, the more that we're reimbursed for. And that's the structure that we live in. And so I think many healthcare leaders ultimately, if you scratch the surface, would admit that really the business that they are in is what some people have called the heads in beds business. And I think that's a tremendous mistake because we are not, in fact, in the heads in beds business. We're in the healthcare business. And healthcare can be provided in lots of different ways and lots of different places. And beds in hospitals is one place that healthcare can be provided, but it can be provided in many other places, some of which we've contemplated and some of which we've not. So it can be provided in community hospitals, which are less expensive than academic medical centers, but it can also be provided in ambulatory settings, whether that's things like urgent care sites or ambulatory surgery centers, but it also can be provided in physician offices. And then take it a step further. It can be provided in non-traditional places, in a drugstore or a place like that. And then take it a step further and think about the fact that it can be provided in patients' homes. And then take it even a step further and realize that when we talk about healthcare and talk about patients, maybe we should think about patients as people and not just as patients. And what I mean by that is most people do not spend their lives as patients, do not spend their lives sick. And so thinking about how do we not only help people deal with their disease, but how do we help people from getting sick in the first place? And that's these are all things that are intuitive to your average layperson, but not so intuitive to those of us that are embedded in and invested in a system that has existed and worked in a certain way for more than 100 years. And so what I say to our people is we need to get away from that old model and realize we're in the healthcare business, just like with images for Kodak. That can be done in lots of different ways, some of which we imagine and some of which we don't. And we need to be ready to do that wherever and however it will be provided in the future.
So as an can you give any examples of programs and or technologies or combination thereof, I would imagine, that is achieving that goal that you just laid
out? Well, I think that there are a lot of attempts out there, some with varying levels of success,
yep,
to help us as a system, all of us around the country as systems, manage populations of health. So that requires gathering large amounts of information and making sure that that information is actionable. Easier said than done. The way that we have typically gathered information doesn't lend itself to doing well what we need to do. So the way that we have gathered information that we use to take action to date is really in one of two ways, either through billing systems or through insurance systems, claims yep. data. And that's what we use frequently because that's where we have the most data.
Right.
It just isn't that deep. Or we use electronic health record data increasingly, and that's better than using claims data, but it too is far from perfect. And the reason that it's far from perfect is we've developed these systems, even the clinical systems, really we've optimized them for purposes of billing.
Exactly.
And not for purposes of taking care of people. And until and unless we are able to see that shift, we're really going to struggle.
That's interesting. I mean, it's interesting that you say that technology isn't the whole answer, but there is such a large piece of technology embedded in the system that is was not built for what you for where you're going.
Yeah.
That it in and of itself, I feel, hinders you from being able to move faster. I'm not saying it answers all the questions, but EHRs and the way they're built today hinders the speed at which you could make that transition because it doesn't give you the information you need.
I think that ultimately what we're going to have to do is a little heretical in that we're going to have to be able to move away from the extraordinarily rigid, structured data entry that we now use to date and have to do in order to get actionable
right.
information and allow us to go back to the free-form narrative. Now that we're increasingly have natural language processing tools and other things that can then extract actionable information in that, I think we'll get to really interesting things in a much more flexible fashion. We're not there yet, and I'm not seeing great tools to allow us to do it, but many of us, many of our organizations are working on projects that will allow us to do it. So we're doing things like pulling out of large amounts of freeform narrative the ability to predict which patients will actually show up for visits and which won't.
Right.
That is something that's extraordinarily difficult to do, and yet we're now already doing that in a pilot form, and we're able to predict somewhere along the lines up front, before the patient actually shows up or doesn't, in 60% of the no-shows, we can predict it up front. And that's through being able to sift through large amounts of unstructured data. More important than that is being able to do things like being able to predict preventable harm. Preventable harm, for instance, in the intensive care unit.
Yep.
How can we, up front, before that harm occurs, predict which patients are at greatest risk for preventable harm and then do something about it? We're still, I think, there are a lot of people out there trying to solve these sorts of problems, and we'll get there eventually, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, I feel good about is, I think in the past there was a much smaller set of people working on these problems. And I think since the shift to a value-based and more data-driven oriented, there are a larger number of people. So hopefully there's a few more shots on goal than there were previously. And it also seems like there's a different group of people shooting on this. In other words, it's not just healthcare people, but there's a bunch of IT guys that don't know healthcare that are willing to take some incredibly crazy risks. And I'm not saying most of them will fail miserably, right. But there's a few that will come up with something that could be useful to a system like yours.
No, I think you're right. And I think we've not seen the thing that will wholesale transform the way that we deliver care yet. But it will come, and it will probably come from some person or company that we've never heard of. I highly doubt that it'll be from one of the entrenched incumbents.
Yes.
And if we look at other industries, that's frequently been the case. It'll come out of the field. You're right that there are now a multitude of people that are fascinated with the problems that we have and trying to come up with solutions. And I'm anxious to see and test some of the things. And you know, we here at Beth Israel Lahey Health are anxious to be part of that, to say to people, come, bother us. Let's try some of these things together. And that's the only way, ultimately, that we will affect significant change.
I think we just doubled John's queue of activities that he needs to go after.
There you go.
Is there any other words of wisdom that you'd like to share with us before we...
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, maybe to reiterate what I've said already, my own background as a person who spent many years in healthcare IT has left me somewhat jaded around the existing solutions and somewhat skeptical about the fact that IT will be the silver bullet to all of our problems. But it will certainly be a piece of it. And I am looking forward to us and others helping to make sure that that happens.
Excellent. Well, thank you, and hope to see you again sometime soon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Take care.
And that's it for this episode. If you enjoyed Moneyball Medicine, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It is greatly appreciated. Hope you join us next time. Until then, farewell.